Today is Tuesday, June 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up...
For three decades, Tankman has been the most prominent symbol representing what happened on the night of June 4th, 1989, when the Chinese Communist Party crushed the protest, made up mostly by students. Among the hundreds of thousands of protesters was Peking University's...
All is quiet in Beijing's Tiananmen Square on the 30th anniversary of a bloody crackdown, and at least four people are dead and two more wounded after a gunman entered a hotel in northern Australia today and opened fire on the guest. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, President Donald Trump deployed a mix of diplomacy and barbs in his joint news conference with British Prime Minister Theresa May in London today. Trump said the U.S. is committed to a phenomenal trade deal with Britain as the country prepares to leave the EU. He saw no limitations on future intelligence sharing despite disagreements over the threat posed by China tech giant Huawei, and he praised outgoing British leader May, saying she has done a very good job. Thousands of demonstrators have thronged central London to protest the American leader's visit. But when asked today about his reaction to the demonstrations, the U.S. president said he saw only a single small protest and media reports of much larger crowds at fake news. And also Prime Minister May praised the relationship between the U.S. and Britain, but she did acknowledge some differences over climate change and Iran. Britain still supports the Paris Climate Accord, which Trump has rejected, and supports the Iran nuclear agreement that the U.S. has withdrawn from. May spoke days before she is scheduled to resign after failing to secure a deal to complete Britain's exit from the EU. That process will be inherited by her successor with no clear path to a resolution among sharply divided parties. Earlier at a business roundtable event, Trump said he thinks the U.S. and Britain will reach a very, very substantial trade deal that is very fair. May said Britain and the U.S. could expand their economic partnership with a bilateral trade deal, and that her government believes in keeping markets free, fair, and open. 30 years ago, the Chinese government sent its army and tanks to crush student protests in Tiananmen Square in Beijing. Since then, the government has not only tried to systematically erase the memories of the violent suppression, but also contain any sort of call for political reform. Talking to political activists and analysts, VOA's Anna Cook looks at how shots fired then still reverberate today.
For three decades, Tankman has been the most prominent symbol representing what happened on the night of June 4, 1989, when the Chinese Communist Party crushed the protest, made up mostly by students. Among the hundreds of thousands of protesters was Peking University student-athlete Fang Zheng. He, too, stood in front of a tank that night.
Poisonous gas surrounded us, and one of my classmates fainted. I tried to move her to the side of the road. That's when I saw through the fog that tanks were quickly approaching us. It was too late by the time I noticed. The tank ran over my legs, but I'm one of the lucky ones. A lot of other students were completely squashed under the tanks.
The bloodshed was a culmination of tension that had been building for months. Until that evening, millions of citizens across cities in China protested peacefully, but were then suppressed with deadly force. It was a turning point for China, but for many Chinese, the events remained largely unknown because of government censorship. Xu Yige, who was born in 1990, says he secretly watched a documentary on the Tiananmen incident with his friends. After learning about the truth, he says nothing changed.
We didn't do anything afterwards. In general, the students don't like to talk, but also they don't like to openly debate these kinds of things. There is no sentiment among my classmates that the country belongs to them.
But Chinese students are not completely apolitical, says Michael Davis, an expert on China's authoritarian rule.
There's a kind of pragmatism on the other side of that, that we can't really do anything to change this. So that they may not be out on the street protesting, but I think they're aware that there may be a more open path.
The international community and political activists exiled overseas have repeatedly called for China to apologize for the 1989 massacre. They have also asked countries like the the U.S. to use trade as a way to pressure China for its continuing human rights violations.
But I think the U.S. Has called for, and we will continue to call for, as have others in the international community, a full public accounting for those killed, detained, and missing. We shouldn't forget that this was a full-on massacre.
Ahead of June 4th, Chinese authorities have detained dozens of people and taken down social media accounts talking about the massacre. Davis says Xi Jinping's obsession with censoring any talk about Tiananmen reflect the growing insecurity of the leadership.
I think they know that as a society becomes richer, as their society is becoming richer, that there's an incentive to change the form of government, to make it more democratic, more open. So I think under Xi Jinping, the evidence is very clear that he feels that any relaxation of the grip of the Communist Party would be a threat.
As China tries to suppress any sort of commemoration of the Tiananmen protests, rallies and vigils overseas like these here in Washington stand as proof that the world has not yet forgotten.
You know, the mission remains undone. We have to continue. So we come here to reaffirm, recommit ourselves to continue this struggle.
Although 30 years has passed, I hope people will remember this tragedy, because the Chinese government has not done anything but censor this incident. So I feel a responsibility to remind people not to forget what happened that day.
When Chinese officials do speak of Tiananmen, they refuse to criticize it. This week at an international forum in Singapore, Chinese Defense Minister Wei Fenghe again repeated the official line, saying the crackdown was the correct policy at the time to quell political turmoil. Anna Cook, VOA News, Washington.
Among the top stories in the world, Russia denies reports it has sharply cut its military and technical personnel in Venezuela. Afghanistan President Ashraf Ghani says he will visit Pakistan June 27th in an effort to improve tense relations with Afghanistan's neighbor and mend ties that are often characterized by mistrust. And two-time Olympic champion Caster Semenya is temporarily allowed to compete without lowering her testosterone levels following a ruling by Switzerland's Supreme Court. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
Did you know that you have a built-in network of biological clocks, which over a roughly 24-hour cycle regulates a variety of processes such as behavior, physiology, and metabolism? This system of clocks is usually synchronized with our body's master clock located within the brain's hypothalamus. Scientists have suspected that these individual clocks can operate independently of the master clock. To test this theory, researchers from Spain and the U.S. stopped the circadian system of specially bred mice. Then they activated individual clocks in the liver. While all the other clocks had been disabled, the researchers found that the liver continued to keep its circadian rhythm and performed its critical functions. The researchers say that their work could help scientists learn more about circadian rhythms, the aging processes, and a person's general well-being. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Over now to the African continent, where Sudan's ruling military council has deployed troops around government buildings and roads leading to the capital, Khartoum. The increased security follows a crackdown on a sit-in demonstration near the Ministry of Defense. Yesterday, reports say at least 35 people were killed as security forces linked to the government cleared the weeks-long protest. The head of the Transitional Military Council, Lieutenant General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, has halted further negotiations with opposition representatives. He also has called for a government to be formed and elections to be held within 9 months. The French news agency reports that protest leaders have answered by calling on supporters to take part in total civil disobedience. And now over to Australia, where at least 4 people are dead and 2 more wounded after a gunman entered a hotel in northern Australia today and opened fire on the guests. Northern Territory police say a 45-year-old man with a shotgun entered the Palms Hotel in the main business district in Darwin, the capital. A witness told national broadcaster ABC the suspect shot up all the rooms and he went to every room looking for somebody and he shot them all up before rushing out of the hotel and driving off in a pickup truck. Police later arrested the suspected gunman but have provided no other details. Prime Minister Scott Morrison says the attack has not believed to be terrorism related. This is VOA's International Edition.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an exclusive interview with the Prime Minister of Buganda, Charles Maiga. Buganda is the largest, most influential kingdom in Uganda. Buganda and the future on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Well, analysts have questioned the secrecy surrounding the arrival of three Chinese warships into Sydney Harbor. About 700 personnel are on board the vessels, which are now docked at an Australian naval base for a four-day stopover. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Commuters and tourists were greeted Monday by the sight of three Chinese warships, with about 730 officers and crew sailing into Sydney's famous harbor. An army frigate, an auxiliary replenishment ship, and an amphibious vessel from the People's Liberation Army will be stationed at the Australian naval base at Garden Island for a four-day stopover. The visit wasn't announced by Australian authorities in advance. Analysts say the visit, the biggest Chinese military task force to sail into an Australian port in years, is a symbol of Beijing's growing naval strength in the Indian and Pacific Oceans. Canberra says it's a reciprocal visit, but defence experts believe the lack of information about the warships shows that Australia is wary of making public comments about the Chinese military. Peter Jennings is from the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, an independent think tank.
To me, it just points to the fact that our government and our defence establishment don't know how to talk about China. They're scared of making comments in public, and I think they need to get their act together and work out how they can talk about China in a way that they can explain their business to the average Australian.
Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison has played down the timing of the visit, with the Chinese warships arriving the day before the 30th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre. The three Chinese vessels have recently completed anti-piracy operations in the Gulf of Aden. Mr. Morrison says the stopover in Sydney was a long-term arrangement.
They were returning from counter-drug trafficking operations in the Middle East, and that is a further demonstration of the relationship that we have, and this had been in train for some time.
Australia has noted that territorial disputes between China and its regional neighbours in the South China Sea have entered a dangerous new phase in recent years. Experts have said that as the United States' closest ally in the region, Australia may come under pressure from Washington to make its presence felt in the South China Sea, beyond statements of diplomatic support for freedom of navigation. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Well, an estimated 1.5 billion Muslims around the world are making Eid al-Fitr. The holiday comes at the end of the holy month of Ramadan, but the start of the holiday can vary from country to country. This year, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and the United Arab Emirates have announced the first day of Eid as today. However, Egypt, Syria, Jordan, and the Palestinian territories will not start the holiday until Wednesday. Eid is timed to when local religious officials are able to first see the crescent moon and declare the holiday in their areas. Well, a French court sentenced an imam from northern France to 2 years in prison yesterday for helping migrants try to cross the English Channel in inflatable boats. The 39-year-old preacher, who is of Iranian origin and was granted political asylum in France, is accused of organizing several crossings from northern France to England last December. Also, in other news there, Paris authorities just opened an emergency shelter for some of the 1,000 or so migrant women and children who are living on the streets of northern Paris. I spoke with reporter Catherine Field about these latest migrant developments.
The French court sentenced an imam who'd been living in northern France for 2 years in prison. He was found guilty of helping migrants cross the English Channel in inflatable boats. Now, the preacher is of Iranian origin. He'd been living in the city of Rouen, which is in northern France. And it was at his property that the police found two boats, three outboard engines, and life jackets. Also up in court was a 29-year-old Senegalese man who had the police say helping the preacher. They say that he was complicit and he received 9 months prison sentence. Now, the preacher said that he provided six, possibly seven boats to migrants, but he said he didn't know that they were going to be used for making illegal crossings from France into the United Kingdom. This particular case comes really hot on the heels of another one in March when a court jailed two Iraqis and an Iranian for also organizing these illegal crossings between France and the United Kingdom.
What has been the reaction to this from human rights organizations?
Well, human rights organizations have been saying that if these people had been, particularly the migrants, had been dealt with properly, they wouldn't have to resort to these sorts of measures. And in particular, they point out that police and gendarmes have been very active in the Calais port area, chasing migrants away, making sure that they just don't feel welcome there. And the human rights groups are pointing out that even though French officials say some 276 migrants made the crossing last year, they say that it's anyone's guess how many tried to make that crossing, because they quite easily have either drowned, fallen overboard, or made it to the United Kingdom and just disappeared into communities there, not having come to the attention yet of the authorities.
Also, I understand that Paris authorities just opened an emergency shelter for some of the 1,000 migrants still sleeping out on the streets.
Yes, indeed. This is in a disused factory. It's in a part of Paris to the north where we have been seeing those migrant encampments spring up. It's not actually in a very nice part of the city. It's squeezed in between some disused industrial sites and a rubbish depot. But the mayor of Paris said that they had seen that there were so many sleeping rough, they felt they just had to do something. So they've opened this daycare center. They say they have got approval and they've got funding to have it going for 4 months only. Now, it's only a daycare center. Inside, there are 12 showers. There will be a place for migrants to sleep. There will also be healthcare facilities, as well as immigration lawyers who will be on hand to give any legal advice. But it is only a daycare center. What they're also saying is that they will use the facilities there of doctors and NGOs so that they can also focus on women and children, because they're very concerned that women and children are not being sent to resettlement camps or to proper facilities, and that's their focus as well, is to get women and children off the streets, sleeping in tents beside canals, beside roads, and that they should actually be priority for getting into some sort of emergency accommodation.
That was reporter Catherine Field in Paris. While the United Nations has accused Australia of breaching international law by detaining a refugee indefinitely in immigration detention. The complaint is over a 36-year-old Tamil man from Sri Lanka who has been held in a detention center in Sydney since 2010. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The Sri Lankan man is known as Kumar. He arrived in Australia's northern waters seeking asylum in 2010 and was transferred to the Villawood Detention Centre in Sydney. He's been there ever since. Australian intelligence officials issued Kumar with what's known as a qualified security assessment. This meant that they'd identified information relevant to national security, but there was no recommendation to either grant the man a visa or keep him in detention. The Sri Lankan man is legally held under Australian law, but the United Nations Working Group on Arbitrary Detention has requested Kumar's release and that Canberra change the legislation to comply with global standards. Alison Batterson is a human rights lawyer who's representing Kumar. She believes his claim for asylum is genuine and that he was mistreated in Sri Lanka.
Kumar went through a checkpoint when he was a young man and disappeared. And he was eventually found quite a significant period of time later in a coma in hospital. So he has been identified by the Australian government as somebody who would face harm if forced to go back to Sri Lanka.
Kumar has been diagnosed with severe mental health problems and is legally blind. His lawyer insists he poses no threat to Australia, despite his alleged involvement in disturbances in detention. John Coyne is from the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, an independent think tank.
Kumar was involved in several incidents, and whilst he was not fit to stand trial from a mental health perspective, allegations of setting fire to a detention centre, verbal abuse of a female staff member.
It's 3 years since Kumar's case was last reviewed by Australian officials. No other country has offered to resettle him. In a statement, Australia's Home Affairs Department said it would review the United Nations recommendations. Since the 1990s, Australia has automatically detained all asylum seekers arriving without a valid visa. In recent years, migrants coming by boat have been detained in Australian-run camps in the South Pacific. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Thank you, Phil. Well, you've been listening to VOA's International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, and our engineer, Thomas Blondet. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. You can listen to Encounter following VOA News, either on the radio or online at voanews.com/encounter. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to encounter@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.